Who are you carrying all those bricks for, anyway?
God? Is that it? God? Well, I tell you, let me give you a little inside information about God. God likes to watch. He's a prankster. Think about it. He gives man instincts. He gives you this extraordinary gift, and then what does he do? I swear, for his own amusement, his own private cosmic gag reel. He sets the rules in opposition. It's the goof of all time. Look, but don't touch. Touch, but don't taste. Taste, don't swallow. And while you're jumping from one foot to the next, what is he doing? He's laughing his sick fucking ass off. He's a tight ass. He's a sadist. He's an absentee landlord. Worship that, never.
Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, is that it?
Why not? I'm here on the ground with my nose in it since the whole thing began. I've nurtured every sensation man has been inspired to have. I cared about what he wanted, and I never judged him. Why? Because I never rejected him, in spite of all his imperfections. I'm a fan of man! I'm a humanist. I rest my case.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is. Even in a world where men still have nipples. But deeper we go into finding these truths here at Aeon Bide. Welcome, everybody. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your pompous of gnosis, that madman across the waters of creation. Good to see everybody on this Friday. I hope everybody's enduring the cold and staying safe from the flames as 2025 is starting out pretty apocalyptic in every shape or form, but the journey is still inward and it's still about breaking open reality. And today we will do a little demiurge hunting as we go into the Bible to find out again those deeper truths and who is pulling the strings. So once again, it is a pleasure to be joined for a second time by Simeon Landstrom. Simeon, thank you very much for coming back.
Pleasure is all mine. It's great to be back. Great to hear from you.
Always good to talk to you, man. And with us too, we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good this morning. And pondering the situation and antiquity of all these different gods that somehow wound up in one. It reminds me of the AI situation where we have all these different versions of AI. So Philip K. Dick would have a field day with this. He would take all the different AIs and he'd have many versions of the zebra.
Yeah, he would have a blast. Yeah,
Alice 2.0.
Will the real supreme god please stand up?
Right.
Oh well, it's fun to speculate, and at the end of the day, it's a journey of self-knowledge, finding out what we are about and our place in the universe too. So it's an endless speculation, and it should be fun and it should be rewarding. Well, I see people already filing into the chat. Good to see everybody again. If you have any questions for Simeon, please super chat them so we can separate them, or any complaints against Vance and I, put them there. We would be glad to take it on the chin, because it's just people's opinion. It's all subjectivity at the end of the day. But of course, your voice is always valid in our opinion. So Simeon, before we get started on your presentation, please tell the audience a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you became a heretic.
Well, I've always been a bit of a black sheep, I guess. Became an anarchist when I was like 15, I think. So it's pretty early. I started researching this stuff. I would call myself more of a researcher than anything. Like I research these topics with a passion. I mean, sometimes the videos just write themselves. It's synchronicity after synchronicity after synchronicity, and you're just like, it's putting together the puzzle pieces.
Very true.
And also becoming a nice temper, just a page, but has helped me in my esoteric study for sure. And yeah, I just have a passion for the philosophy in general, the esoteric, history, everything mysterious, cryptids. You know, if it's high strangeness, I'm all about it.
There you go. There you go. You're having fun, which is all that matters. And when did you first hear about Gnosticism or Gnostic thought?
Oh, it might have been like 5 years ago. And I think it was through you, your podcast, actually. Hmm. So it's an honor.
No. We love talking to people and giving people voices. That's what this place is. That's why I call it the virtual Alexandria, because we want voices, alternative voices to be heard. And then people can make up their own damn mind, as the Oracle in the Matrix tells Neo. And yeah, we are also having fun too. So awesome. So tell us a little bit about what we are about to receive for those about to rock, as AC/DC sang. You want to bring up the visuals now, or you want to talk about what's coming down the pipe with Mr. L.A. Yon?
We can go with the slides.
All right.
Get some footage in there.
All right. Yeah. Some B-roll. Some of the cinema. Let's see. Where are you? Every time I do this, it changes on me, but I think we got it here. All right. So we got the...
So...
Man with Spear, the classic, huh?
Yeah. That's... this is like God, too. I mean, it's actually a portrayal of Yahweh, but ignore that. this is a God so ancient that mankind has forgotten him. His name is El, from which we have the angel names like Mikael, Raphael, and even, you know, one who wrestles with God, Israel. And wasn't Jesus supposed to be named Emmanuel?
Too? Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's what I would call God. His name, El Yon, means the first light in Phoenician. So it's like the spark of creation, I guess. His titles were creator of creatures, father of the gods, father of man. He is creator eternal, your patriarch. He has a bunch of titles, this guy. El is the gray-bearded ancient one, full of wisdom. This is, I suspect, highly suspect, because El Elyon is way older than Yahweh. Way, way older. I mean, it goes back to Anu and Sumer, and God knows how far back that goes, you know? So that's where we get the classical image of a man. Him as a bearded man. I'm guessing that comes from El Elyon, to be honest. So another title, Malku, which means king. Father of years, El Gibor, the warrior, Lutpani, proud face, by Strong's Hebrew concordance, meaning hidden. So that ties into, is his name Amun, the hidden god? Yeah. Mm. And El is repeatedly referred to as Bull El, or the bull god. And here we have this classic depiction of consumer of, I'm going to guess that's Anunnaki, because it has the hat, you see, with the bull horns. And the bull, it represented royalty. Things like fertility and strength and those kind of things. We also have that connected to Helios, which had cattle, bulls.
Right.
So it's also like a solar connection there. So let us start with the examining the Bible, because I've read the Bible. I haven't seen Elyon. Well, you need to read the original language to understand it. So. When El Elyon gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all the sons of man, he set the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of sons of the sons of God. For Yahweh's portion was his people. Jacob was the lot of his inheritance. That's Deuteronomy 32:8, translated the, you know, my own translation, but it's pretty close. And it was definitely, it's the exact one, actually. And as you can see here, El Elyon is seen as higher ranking than Yahweh, dividing the lands amongst the sons of God. And I think there were like 70 tribes or something. So 72, he had 70. At least. 72, I think. 70, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Because 72 was the Septuagint, I think.
You're right.
So, and one of them is quite obviously Yahweh. And the funny thing is, Yahweh, the almighty, fear God, he was so low ranking that he got a people without a land.
That's funny.
And from the earliest mention of Yahweh, he had a wife, Asherah.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy didn't even just steal the role as the Most High. He literally stole his wife too. Because Asherah was originally El's wife.
Right.
So. And he's a homebreaker. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone, and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them." Exodus 24:12. Well, nothing strange about this. It's pretty obvious. But as that often is, the same event is recorded twice in different books. So let's see what Acts says about this. This is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear. This is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us." Acts 7:37. So, is Yahweh an angel? Is that what it says there?
Mm-hmm.
So, it literally says that it was an angel who gave most of the commandments. So is Yahweh an angel then? He's not the almighty creator. He's an angel. Perhaps even a fallen angel. I don't know.
Yeah. Stealing wives, has no land. Yeah.
Do you know what word they used for angel in the original, in the Greek?
I haven't actually looked at the interlinear for this one. Sorry about that.
That's fine.
Yeah. And also another thing I want to clear up is that Lucifer is, made a video about it. Lucifer is actually not a name. When they bastardized the Bible by translating it into English incorrectly, Lucifer means like bright morning star, basically. And it's not even a title. It's a description. It means an angel, a morning star. That's what Jesus calls himself. He says, "I'm the bright morning star." If you look at Job 38:7, when the morning star sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. As you can see, morning star just means angel. So unless you count Yahweh's name as Satan, the name of Satan is never mentioned in the Bible. Not once. So call the dragon, the serpent, you know.
Yeah, it's a, and when it says Satan, it's just, it's a title more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It means adversary, yeah, I think.
Yeah, he's God's prosecutor. And it could be another angel. We don't know, originally.
Yeah. There we go. Angelos. Yeah, so it means angel, yeah.
And I think in Hebrew it's something like Malak or something like that, which later became like Malak Tau was the angel. So messenger. It's a messenger. An angel is just a messenger.
Yeah. And you see that in Lucifer. It's translated from... is it Hebrew or Greek? I don't know. I think it's Hebrew. The word is Hal El. You have their El, which means a divinity, pretty much. So I think we're moving on. In the same way, Christ did not take on himself the glory of becoming a high priest, but God said to him, "You are my son. Today I have become your father." And he says in another place, "You are priest forever in the order of Melchizedek." Hebrews 5:5. And Melchizedek, well, guess who he worshipped? He was high priest of not Yahweh, El Elyon. Mm-hmm. So if Jesus is priest forever in the order of Melchizedek, then his father is Elyon and not Yahweh. So it's right there. Abraham as well. He was initiated. Melchizedek is such a mysterious figure. He was the first initiator. It's kind of like the Old Testament John the Baptist, pretty much.
Yeah.
And not even Abraham worshipped Yahweh. And we call them Abrahamic religions, which is quite incorrect when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I got another slide as well. This is from the Nag Hammadi Codices. "Be strong, O Melchizedek, great high priest of God Most High, El Elyon, for the Archons, who are your enemies, made war. You have prevailed over them. And you destroyed your enemies." So
that's from the text Melchizedek, right?
Oh, they have some weird like MKMLT 13113 kind of, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, fragments, you know, I believe. But you might be right. Might just be called that. I got another one from the library here. "I am Melchizedek, the priest of God Most High, El Elyon. I know that it's I who am truly the image of the true high priest." So even Melchizedek's name is Canaanite. My king is Sedek, is what Melchizedek means. Sedek is a Canaanite god, or a Canaanite tradition, yeah. And Abraham, he was from Sumer, originally. So, and Melchizedek was king of Salem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Shalem, where the name comes from, is another god in the Canaanite pantheon. So the church really wants to, you know, forget about all this Canaanite origin and everything. But no, it's Yahweh. It's always been Yahweh. Okay, so wasn't the Yahweh a Canaanite god originally? I don't know. We don't talk about that part. But Abram said to the king of Sodom, With great hand, I have sworn an oath to Yahweh, God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. Genesis 14:22. This is the New International Version. It basically translates the same in most like King James, I believe it's the same. But the problem is, Yahweh hadn't revealed his name back then, had he? He had not. That comes later with Moses, the burning bush and everything. So if we read the Septuagint version, Abram said to the king of Sodom, I will stretch out my hand to the Lord. And here it's not the Lord as in Yahweh, it's Kyrios, the Most High God, El Elyon, who made the heaven and the earth. That's Genesis 14:22 from the Septuagint. And I believe Genesis, the New International Version, is based on the Masoretic text. But this is the Septuagint version. And it does not include the Tetragrammaton, the name of Yahweh.
Right.
So scholars have concluded that the people who wrote the Septuagint were looking at an older Hebrew copy, which did not include the Tetragrammaton. You find this, it's so tragic. I hate it. It's just like, makes me sick. You find this all over the Bible. They just didn't say, oh, this is Yahweh. Oh, this is Yahweh. It's got to be Yahweh. So.
Rewriting history. So at such an early point.
Yeah, a word at a time.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah. What's that from 1984? Those that control, those who control the past, control the future.
Yeah.
So, moving on, we have another issue here with chronology, which I think you're going to like this one as an Gnostic and get some proof that Yahweh is actually Satan. So let's go. I'm excited. Again, the anger of Yahweh burned against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, go and take a census of Israel and Judah. So the king said to Joab and the army commanders with him, go through the tribes of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, and enroll the fighting men, so that I may know how many there are. This is from 2 Samuel 24. This appears again, actually, this chronology, in, ironically enough, in Chronicles. So here we go. Black on white. Satan rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census of Israel. So David said to Joab and the commanders of the troops, go and count the Israelites from Beersheba to Dan. Then report back to me so that I may know how many there are. 1 Chronicles 21. So, what are the Yahweh worshippers?
That's a good one.
Whoopsie.
They forgot to, they missed that part of the Bible. I mean, if scribes would have seen that, they would have been like,
yeah, he was acting as an adversary, right? I mean, you know, in both passages, it was an adversary against Israel.
Yep. I mean, I guess you know, I look at that as being the Satan, but I guess it might just mean being adversarial.
And why does God need a census? Can he just wave a wand for his spreadsheets?
He lost his calculator.
If he has a certain amount of Hebrews, L will give him more money. I don't know. It's good.
Well, you know what? I always thought it was because they were supposed to have faith that even if they didn't have enough number, if they were outnumbered by the enemy, that they could presume anyway because Yahweh was behind them. But if they were counting, that was a lack of faith because, oh, well, if we have less people than them, then we're in trouble. Right. That's what I always thought.
Yeah, he even got pissed about that. Oh, There's one where he always like, oh, go destroy these people, burn them, smite them, burn everything, take their gold, you know, the usual.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, but they have a big army. So he starts counting his army, his men. And Yao is like, you're not supposed to question my, you doubt me?
Exactly.
The plague.
Okay, that makes sense.
Jealous guy. Well, yes.
Was that the, no, that wasn't the time. Was that the time he sent like poisonous snakes? No, I think that was a different one. Yeah. Let's see. So, also, I want to mention that I've been reading the Old Testament. Working my, I finished the Torah now. I'm in Joshua. And why does God need armies to fight a nation? I mean, he's God, right? It should be pretty snap of a finger that should all drop dead.
Man, because just smite them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think I think Dan McClellan had a good point, and that to them and the gods was a spectrum, as above, so below. So you see it. So, for example, if the Hebrews were fighting the Canaanites, Yahweh and Baal were fighting up in heaven too. There was like game, you know, there was a double war or game. So therefore, Yahweh was busy because he was meant to also take on the other god.
As above, so below.
Exactly. So it was, he couldn't just take it out on the humans. Although sometimes, yeah, they would throw pestilence on the enemy army before the war or something like that. So it was a Game of Thrones with these guys.
Didn't he lose some fights too? To like the ball?
Yeah, there was some where I think I forgot. The Judges, where the enemy had iron chariots, and for some reason Yahweh could not work his magic against it. I mean, again, there were some very intricate magical cosmic rules that the gods and the humans had to obey. I mean, again, to the ancients, gods were not omnipotent, omniscient, or omnipresent. They were just a higher form of being, if you know what I mean.
And usually they'd blame it on the Israelites, you know, or the Hebrews, or whoever it was. Well, you transgress one of my laws, so you lose, right?
Yeah, not enough.
Never his fault.
They right. needed that louche, that egregore to be powerful, sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah, you counted a few people. You're out of here.
Yeah, so much for El Shaddai. Which means like the all powerful one, something like that. Yeah, I believe it. If it does.
Hey, he could even see the snake in the Garden of Eden, for crying out loud, right? Yeah, if he said, hey, get the snakes out of here. Bad pest control.
Well, you have to ask, Adam, where are you? He didn't know where Adam was.
Yeah.
But it makes it more interesting when you look at it that way.
Yeah, I mean, originally, the ancient Israelites, the ancient Hebrews, I guess, were henotheistic. Mm-hmm. If that's a new term for people, listeners might have not have heard it. It means that they had one higher god, Al-Yon, the Most High, but they also worshipped a bunch of divinities below him. They saw all the gods as being like an emanation of from him, from the one creator. I look at it like light through a prism. You know, you have white light being like the El Elyon, the first light. Mm-hmm. Then you get the different colors, this color spectrum. Mm-hmm. You also have that in Sumer, there are usually seven gods on the council. So that's the seven colors of light.
Yeah, and then people wonder why they think they're aliens, because they kind of act like extraterrestrials. Council up in heaven, engineering humanity and human history. I mean, it's all there.
Aren't they by definition extraterrestrials?
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So. I mean, even God, by any definition, would be an ET.
Yeah, very true.
Let's see. I've heard like gods don't like have bodies in the way we think about it. Like they're bound to a body. It's more like the body has them. Or I mean, it gets so metaphysical, the whole like, because I see the gods as both internal archetypes inside of us, like more like rage and passion, courage,
mm-hmm.
Venus love, like sensual stuff, and Hermes, of course, with the communication. You know, if I started rambling all the things, Hermes presides over here all day. And the Greeks had an easy way or a funny way, I don't know, logical way of looking at the birth of the gods. Like you have, if Mors, that's like anger, I guess, had a child with Aphrodite, which is love, you get the god of jealousy. Because jealousy would be a combination of love and anger.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
So that's kind of how that works.
Yeah,
how exactly. It works for the Greeks.
Exactly.
And here we have your favorite Archon, right? Mikael.
Yeah, Michael.
Which means he was like God or El.
Right.
So I actually found this. I do a lot of research on Wikipedia. People hate on me, but like it's a good place for like a for a quick overview of the topic. You know, they have all the sources you can look at if you want deeper. Just a quick overview. I found this on the Gnosticism, like the wiki for Gnosticism, just main page. It's right there. That some early Christians, Gnostics, saw the pre-incarnate Jesus as Mikael.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you look at Revelation, I don't know it. I don't know it by hand, but it says that Jesus saw Satan fall like a star from heaven, something like that. While in the Old Testament, who was present there? Is that the Old Testament? I don't know. It's Michael who defeats the dragon, right?
Yeah.
Must be the New Testament, yeah.
Apocalypse. And, yeah,
so we only know one God by name being present there. It just says Michael and his angels, you know? So if Michael was there to see it, well, if he's Jesus, then of course, made perfect sense.
Yeah, it depends. I know there are some ancient gems. You can find it in April de Koninck's book on the Gospel of Judas that show the demiurge being associated with Michael. So some Gnostics were like, nah, an angel, they're bad. And he's bad. So, but the Gnostics were always, like we're doing right now, they were always speculating on the nature of these beings. Trying to figure out, having visions, flights, and again, finding out with a real supreme God, please stand up.
Yeah, I don't know. And the Gnostic writings, I feel like they're very psychological. You have to look at them that way. But some of them just seem like ancient fan fiction to me, to be honest. I love the Gospel of Thomas, though.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. Incredible read. I think I've listened to it like three times now. great, is great stuff. But some of the other Gnostic sects, I'm like, it's kind of contradicts a lot of other things, which we know, like Paul wrote and like, you know, so on and so forth. So I'm like,
Yeah.
I try to go with the as best I can. I mean, you can't trust the Bible, obviously, because the letter to the Colossians, that's a Roman church forgery, if I ever seen one. Irene has found that. Oh, we found this. We found it. Well, it just so happened to coincide with your book against heresies.
Right.
I mean, look at that. Yeah. The Romans never gave up. They're just let's become Christian now. It's mainstream.
Yeah, when you always, Gnostic thought is very varied. Again, they were speculating on all these ideas. Again, like we do it right now. You do it with your videos. I do it with my podcast, or like, let's go here, let's go there. Of course, they had their visions and mystic experience like we do. I mean, we're affected by it. You do a ritual and you're like, I need to go here. I saw this. I don't care what the research says. I got to stick to this. So they were having conversations, and which your research reminds me of Margaret Barker. She wrote a great book called The Great Angel, where she says that Yahweh was originally an angel of El. And she says, and she's come out and said, you know, the Gnostics were actually trying, or they were keeping the old El Elyon Asherah cult alive, because Yahweh had become supreme and he was suppressing everything, even in the times of Jesus. So the Gnostics were smuggling this old kind of shamanistic religion, and, you know, calling Asherah Sophia, calling the one Elyon the one, and that's what they were doing. So that's the question. So Simeon, who is Jesus? Who would you say Jesus is? Is he Elyon's father, or I mean son, or is he Yahweh's child?
Well, I would say he's Elyon's son, and that he's the brother of Yahweh. One of the angels, as we, I mean, I never really understood this the thing about angels that the church are so dogmatic about. God can't have children. The angels like smoke, and they like a magic trick, they appear. But they do look like humans.
He ordered them from Amazon.
Yeah, I always thought the angels were just kind of emanations or projections, because they were said not to have free will, and they always came with messages from, you know, from Yahweh or Elyon or whoever they were from. So they were like, you know, representations or avatars. So that was really not separate beings, since they didn't have separate consciousness. That was my take.
Where does it say in the Bible that they don't have free will? Because if you look at the fall of Satan, sure does seem like he chooses to free will, you know, to not follow God.
Well, I think by the time you had the Book of Enoch kind of is a game changer, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I think Vance is right. In the ancient times, yes, everything was organized and God pretty much ran the show, the spectrum. But I think the Book of Enoch was like, oh, what, you know, what if one angel says, F this, I want human chicks or something like that.
Yeah, I don't put much stock in the Book of Enoch, if I'm honest.
Really?
Yeah, because if you look at how it portrays the Nephilim, let me see, this is the New International Version. Let's see if I can remember it. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days. And when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, the same who were men of renown, heroes of old. So that's the New International Version paraphrased. Mm-hmm. It calls them heroes, men of renown. So if they're evil, why would they be called heroes? So I had an interview a couple of months back with my grandmaster, Timothy Hogan. And I asked him, the same question about that line about heroes. And he said that there are some mentions, I didn't get his source, that Noah was actually of the Nephilim bloodline.
Yeah, yes. Because I think is it three Enoch or two Enoch? The Nephilim were said to have like white electric hair. And when Noah was born as a baby, he had that. It's like, probably telling his wife, who are you sleeping with? So, yes, there is. And there are legends that, yes. Because obviously, even with the Nephilim allegedly being destroyed, there had to be a narrative that their DNA was going to, you know, keep going, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but why would God save a Nephilim?
Well, nobody said he was saying. Nobody said he was saying. I mean, why did he have to wipe out kittens and babies to save humanity?
Yeah, he did a terrible job, though. But if you read the Sumerian stories, I'm sure you're familiar with it. You have Utnapishtim and you have Sias Rudra. Depends on if it's the Akkadian or Sumerian version. And there are many gods that comes up with a plan to wipe humanity out, start over. And it's Enki who warns our Nora character of the impending disaster. And he says to build a boat, an ark, and fill it with bitumen. I think that's asphalt, actually. Tor, right? And take, like, not two of every animal, because that's pretty big orc. Gotta get fit a blue whale. it just like the local cattle he had around him. Some people. That's about it. And there you have two opposing forces. You have Enki, and you have Yahweh and Lil. Who caused the flood, or allowed it to happen? I guess we don't really, we don't really know about that. And the tricky thing about these stories, they're so ancient. I mean, one has to wonder how long the oral history has gone on before they were written down.
Yeah.
So how far back do these stories actually go? I mean, does it go back to the fucking creation of the universe? I mean, who's recording this stuff?
The game of telephone, right? Where the more it's told, you know, the mutations start to set in.
Yeah, you notice that with all the gods. Like, if you say you have a primordial, like, Hermes, Thoth, Mercury archetype, is Mercury? Thoth, maybe. Tehuti. Original archetype. Now you have that through a lens of, like, just speaking from my own culture, you have Odin. It gets a lot more like warrior characteristics, and so this archetype, which I believe they're real characters, because there are even photos from old newspapers of these skulls they found, old Odin from the 1800s. Mm-hmm. I guess. So if giants existed, still do exist from the stories I've heard, where did they come from if the gods weren't real? So.
Ancient basketball team. Never know.
Yeah. But I think they're meta-real somehow. They're also... They're a reflection, fractal emanation of the one mind. All the things that are, like, possible. All the emotions, all the passions, all the, you know, attributes. A single mind.
Mm-hmm.
Divided, you know, emanations.
Yeah, well said.
And we also have them. I mean, we can see them. If we look at look up at the sky. We see the main, so five planets plus sun and moon. Mm-hmm. They're out there. We can see them, but I don't know. I've heard it said that the Gals did not get their names from, you know, the planets. And that way, it's like the planets got their name from the gods. So it's like the opposite. The gods are as within, so without.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you hit it on the head. Even when you read the Gnostic text and you're reading the description of the Pleroma, you're like, they're describing a brain. Because to the Gnostic, yeah. God was the supreme mind, and that God was reflected. We were fractals of the supreme mind. So if we could study our own mind, we could eventually study God and get to know God. So like you said, it was an ancient form of psychology and therapy.
Was that Plotinus who said described the divine nous?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many, yeah. The Stoics, all of those guys talked about the nous, so... It wasn't just the Gnostics, but the Gnostics really went into the breaking it down and the layers. It was closer to depth psychology rather than traditional therapy, if you know what I mean. Had to go deep into it. And of course, it always started with trauma. That was it. In some place, there was some trauma, whether it's our birth, whether it's the fall of Sophia, whether it's God disrupting itself to find some new iteration. To explore who it is, it was always some trauma that needed to be healed. So, and here we are, yeah. Thousands, billions of years later.
God knows how long. Too long.
Yeah, it's just time. It's just time.
So, well, so what's the present?
Yeah, that is. That is. That's where we are. That's where we make our stand. So, yeah, yeah, love your ideas. Vince, do you have a question or any super chats? I think I saw some flash.
Oh, yeah, there. Super chats for sure. Let's start with Francis of Sophia Klatt.
Hello, Francis.
Yes, hi.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Years ago, Francis read the Harold Bloom's book, The Book of J. Enny. Thoughts on the J theory. Have you heard of that, Simeon? Thoughts on the J theory?
No, I've never heard of it. Is it the same? Is it similar to the Q, like the source of the?
Yeah, it's the one where it's divided into four, the priestly, the Yahwist, that, and you can tell what parts of the Hebrew Bible are by this group and that group, depending, like one group make Yahweh supreme. The other group is making El supreme. Another group doesn't like Moses, you know, because, you know, when like there's that famous scene where Yahweh tried to kill Moses because he didn't circumcise himself, and he tried to kill while he was parting in Egypt. So you see these four things, and I think it's still a pretty valid, or at least it's a helpful theory to understand all the different layers of editing and who took over.
Oh, yeah.
Like who's in power writes the history, and in some generations, this type of priest or king was in power. Even is it Deuteronomy where King Josiah, like 300 BC or little earlier, accidentally found it. Oh, here's another book of the Torah. So,
I have a book called The Dictionary of the Bible written by a Jesuit. Okay. And in there, I think it's pretty traditional, at least in Catholic theology, that there's an Eloist and Yahwist traditions in the Bible. So there's at least those two. And you can see that in the personalities of Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. You know, Genesis 1 is a very different feeling God than Genesis 2. Mm-hmm. So
two accounts, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Who else do we have here? Well, I got to mention Chester.
Thanks,
our
Chester.
Friend Chester. Yeah, thank you so much, Chester. Always very generous. And another super chat. We have a super Marky. He's interested in this topic, and he says the Coptic from Nag Hammadi says Sabaoth was the one that divided the nations.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'd have to see Guts, are you there? Can you tell us what text? Because obviously Sabaoth appears in several texts, and he's mentioned as an Archon, and then I think it's a hypostasis of the Archons. He's a redeemed Archon that goes against his father, the Demiurge. So again, this could be symbolical of, again, getting away from Yahweh to a higher god, because in Sabaoth, he's redeemed and he goes with Sophia in the seventh or eighth heaven and they become a couple. So it could be symbolical again of El and Ashira and the ancient way. So it depends. But he makes a few appearances, and in some, I think he's equated to Abraxas. And in some, again, the Gnostics, sometimes these things are changed because, like we were saying, it's a telephone game and we all have experiences or get or interpret things a little bit different.
The name's new to me. Sounds a bit familiar, but I really have not researched that name whatsoever. So
every day, what are the names of God? Yeah, go to the Old Testament. There's a section where it's got all the names, and one of them is Sabaoth, I think, Lord of Hosts or
something. Interesting. In Deuteronomy 32, verse 8 or whatever, or paragraph 8, the New International says, when the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all mankind, he set up boundaries for the peoples according to the number of sons of Israel. At least we got that one.
Yeah,
it depends. Some translations, I guess it's the Nag Hammadi Bible scrolls. The older version has like the sons of God. I think the Masoretic uses sons of Israel. And it would make a lot more sense if it's the sons of God. And I believe that's the older version as well, would be the sons of God.
Yeah.
Considering the, you know. But it works.
Yeah, I think the book of Job calls them the sons of God and mentions Satan. But again, it seems to be a title back then until he became more a personified figure in early Christian times. So...
yeah, definitely wasn't the devil wasn't in the Old Testament going around doing this and doing that, tempting everybody. That was later, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Have you read researched Answers to Job? Is that what it's called? Carl Jung?
Oh, Carl Jung. Yeah, we've dealt with that. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's like Satan and Yahweh. It's like the alter ego.
Yeah, Satan is God's shadow. But yeah, he's also the one that... yeah.
They're definitely buddies in the book of Job. Yeah, definitely buddies. You know, they're like bar buddies making bar bets up there. Yeah, I bet you can't, you know, sway my guy, Job. Yes, I can. No, you won't. And he tells him to go down, right? He didn't just go down by himself. I'm going down there. I'm going to screw up your guy, Job. No, no, no. God sends him down there. And limits what he can do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No. You're the guest, please.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry about that. I have a habit of, I'm Aries, so patience is not my, you know, always fire. Back to the angels, I just forgot to mention it. It says that, Jesus says, like, they will be like the angels in heaven. Won't be any marriage. And they're like, okay, God, angels don't have sex, obviously. Well, the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men. So what were they doing? We're obviously having sex. So.
Yeah, well, the Book of Enoch kind of changes things, or at least there was some idea in ancient times about rebellious angels with the Hebrews or the early Jews. So, and that, of course, they took it and, you know, the Gnostics obviously took that and ran with it, because then they became the Archons and the Demiurge and all that. So it wasn't, I mean, it appears in many mythologies, right? You've got Prometheus rebelling, Enki kind of goes against the rest of the Anunnaki. There's always some rebellious god that decides it's going to disrupt the order of things. So it had to happen with the Jews. You know, I think it's the human psyche, or it's a cosmic truth that it had to happen in some way. And I know then they try to brush it away. You know, Judaism and Christianity is like, oh, no, only God is in charge. And Satan or Samael is in hell just, you know, being a nuisance. But he's not really doing anything.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, it says Satan and his angels, you know, in Revelation. So, whole army there of rebellious angels mentioned. Also, you mentioned hell. The word used in the Bible, I believe, is Gehenna. At least in the New Testament. Old Testament, you use Sheol, Hades. Hades is New Testament, sorry. So, hell is not a place. It's not a location. It's, I mean, I guess it's the sun, actually, because if you were standing on the top of the surface of the sun, it would look like a lake of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read all the passages about the hell's like, it always says, like, it is the second death, always second death, which means, I mean, the punishment for sin is always death. It's not torture, it's death, destruction. So, annihilationism, I think it's called.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the other thing that, people assume, but it's actually not true, is whoever Satan is, whether he's a real character as he starts to appear in the New Testament or as some angel in the Hebrew Bible, he is never in hell in the New Testament or the Hebrew Bible. He's always, you know, Paul says he's the principality of the air. He's, you know, he falls from lightning. He's like a sky angel more than anything. So I think Revelation has a Abaddon is actually the ruler of the lake of fire. So that's one of the misconceptions that Satan is supposed to be in charge of hell.
So. Yeah, in the book of Job, he's in heaven with hanging out with God, right? And he goes and comes down.
Yeah. So later edition as things changed.
There is something called the, if I recall correctly, something called the abyss, the outer abyss. I don't know. I don't know if that's not hell. It's some things. That's
in the Bible? You mean in the Old Testament?
And I think that this must be in the New Testament.
I haven't heard of that. Miguel, have you heard of that? The abyss?
No, man, unless it's something in Revelation. I mean, there's not much. I think Jesus talks about this fiery place where the worm rules. Who knows where the hell the worm is? But
Leviathan, maybe.
There you go. Suntan Leviathan.
Yeah, I could look it up, but there's something about the outer abyss, something like that, which is not equated to hell. It seems to be like a prison, you know, of some kind, whereas hell is more like destruction.
Yeah. There's purgatory in the Catholics, you know, and that's not in the Bible either, I don't think. Although it's implied.
This is the closest thing I could imagine to purgatory.
Yeah.
We are being purgated.
Well, you don't go to heaven. And actually, if you really look at the Christian theology, from the New Testament, you die and then you go into some indeterminate state until you get physically resurrected at the end of times, right? So there has to be a place where you're kind of held in suspended animation. And I guess that was, that was purgatory or limbo. Right.
I mean, if I looked at it this way, I mean, it's the classical heaven and hell is not real. They're state of mind.
Concepts.
I believe there's a real heaven, but I think that's accurate too. That's like bliss and the despair. Heaven and hell. Those are internal states as well that can be made external. I mean, Jesus doesn't say he's going to bring us to heaven. Says he's going to bring heaven down to earth, new world to come.
Yeah, it's true.
Thy kingdom come.
The kingdom.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, this tradition appears. You had in Tibetan Buddhism, you got the bardos, those places where you decide where to go. And Plato talks about the myth of Ur, where everybody goes down to the underworld, and then you and your daemon decide your next reincarnation, but then you forget. the Egyptians had some sort of reincarnation and then eventually eternal life. So yeah, again, these things were in the air. Speculations, man, speculations.
Well, here's a question. Back in the Garden of Eden, right? Adam and Eve get thrown out of the garden. You know, they have Seth and Cain are left over, and Cain goes out into the world. Well, there must have been other people out there for them to marry and propagate the human race. So what religion and what gods did they have? You know, the Bible, of course, doesn't, you know, it's like, doesn't mention it because that's the competition.
They were Scientologists.
Sea Org.
Yeah.
Where the Leviathan is in Sea Org.
Yeah, speculations. All right. Well, we are a little bit about an hour, so we should probably wrap it up. Simeon, where can people find out your videos or more about yourself and your other heresies?
Well, I run a YouTube channel called The Library of Gnosis. It's also available on Spotify, Apple, BitChute, Odyssey, you know, all the other platforms. You'll find me if you search it up. That's about it.
That's it. So just type it in the search bar. All right. Well, check it out. Yeah, he's got a lot of good videos on these topics. Definitely covers a lot of Gnosticism and other cool topics. And you'll enjoy each one of the videos too. Some are longer, some are shorter, but they're always, always very rewarding to watch. And good stuff. But yeah, we are at the end. For those of you who support, really appreciate the super chats. Again, please support Simeon. Also support this podcast. Like, subscribe, one-time donations. Join the Patreon. You can join for as little as a dollar. I might take that tier later on, or I take crypto, however you can. Help keep the lights of the Pleroma on and keeping these Gnostic ideas going. Lots of good shows coming up. Next week, we should be doing a show on the Egyptian god Anubis, which will be a good one. It's a rescheduling. And then we will be doing also shows coming on the Klipoth, the Kabbalah, and a lot of and the Tree of Death too will be coming up. So yeah, a lot of good shows, so please support. And yes, we end first by saying, Vance, thanks for keeping us company on this journey.
Oh, I'm always fascinated by this subject, so I'm glad to be here, Miguel. Thank you. And thank you, Simeon, for all the wonderful discussion about El Elyon.
Yeah, yes, it's been a pleasure. I always love a platform to be able to spread my ideas, share them.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. And you wear your Man in Black suit, so that's even better. So awesome. Yeah, thanks, Simeon. Always enjoy talking to you. And as always, we will look forward to the next time you want to come on the show and show us some truths about what's underneath the Bible and other texts. Awesome. Well, everybody, I hope you have a good rest of your Friday, and I hope you have a good weekend. Take care, and we will talk soon.
Zaxby's just out-Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.